Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back, our co-host, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, former commander at LAPD, and now he's migrated over to Ohio. He still has his roots, and thanks to Jeff, we have a new addition to the show, Ralph Ornelas. And, you know, Ralph is formerly L.A. Sheriff's Office, not the PD. Yeah, there you go. So and Ralph, refresh my memory. You can open up your microphone there. Your retirement rank when you left.
I retired with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department as a commander. And then I, about 8 months later, became a chief of police for about 3 years with Westminster Police Department.
That's right. I forgot. That's right. In fact, I think even in the email I put a reference to as chief, which I should. So congratulations on that. And the only apology I really need to make is saying that you were LAPD instead of LA Sheriff's Office. And I know you guys have a good relationship. It's kind of like us and Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office here. You know, we have a great little healthy banter going on, kind of like with the fire department, you know, over here. It's all good. So
I love the boys in blue.
Yeah.
Love the boys in blue.
There you go. And he also does some work. You do some, you don't charge for it, but you educate our kids about fentanyl and the dangers involving that, correct?
Yeah. You know, about 3 years ago, some people reached out to me and I put together a PowerPoint presentation to educate middle school students and high school students about the danger of fentanyl. I have a passion for it because I had a niece and nephew on the East Coast and almost died from it. So I said, why not use my experience in life that I've done in captain narcotics gangs and put together something to reach the youth of our communities? And it's very rewarding.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, everything we do, so much of it's about education. So I absolutely love it. So thanks for what you do. Thank you. Guys, a shout out to our sponsors. We have our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. Also, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And yes, thanks to them, we're on satellite radio. AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. GunLearn.com and Medicare.live. Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to 1.5 million people right now. Also, we've got TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundTable.com. We will be doing a Two Bells giveaway today as well because Jeff's on the show. And then we have fishorlandobass.com. Now, this is exciting stuff, Ralph. I want you to pay attention for this because if you have to, I know you've got Disneyland over there, but if you ever come over to Disney World over here in Florida, in Orlando, so Zach has got fishorlandobass.com. That is a bass fishing charter, and it's in Orlando, right, where Disney is, right? So if you're going to take the wife and the kids or grandkids to Disney, I always say, keep the car in gear, put the foot on the brake, and let the wife and the kids out, grandkids, whatever, and then hook up with Zach for a bass fishing charter. It's just a great opportunity. You do have options, you know, when you take the family to Disney's, where I'm going with this. And you've heard about the alligators, the Florida alligator, right? So he does alligator hunting as well. So you can actually do the alligator hunting. It's really, you're not killing the alligators and you're not really, it's catch and relocate, I like to say. They're nuisance alligators that they relocate to other spots. They put them in ponds that are away from civilization. So anyhow, it's a great opportunity. FishOrlandoBass.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, a former lawman.com. And finally, Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. Now, guys, we've got some pretty deep stories that we're going to be talking about. And I normally read through all the topics, and I'll catch you guys up in a second. But what I would like to do is talk about our first topic right now. And we've got two back-to-back topics that are pretty sensational. Let me go in and talk about this first one real quick here. And this one, the source is Yahoo.com and TampaFP.com for the Tampa Free Press. And it starts off with an editorial, and it looks like it's the Chicago Tribune is where it originated. And it says, Illinois can't fix what it won't track. And we have a companion story that will pretty much spill the beans, because there are some beans to be spilled here. So an important way, according to our article, to tell whether a correction system is actually working is to track how many people end up back behind bars after serving time in the prison system, right? So for years now, Illinois has left the public in the dark about how many people are returning to prison after they're being released. The phenomenon is called recidivism, and we all are familiar with recidivism, and it refers to convicts who reoffend, cycling in and out of the correction system. And, you know, are we just putting the same bad guys, you know, back in jail, in and out, in and out, in and out? Is it a revolving door, or are we doing something to rehabilitate, right? So the state has not shown since 2022 how well or poorly it's doing on this measure, according to WGN Investigates, and they disclosed this problem. Now, back in 2022, 37% of the inmates reoffended within just 3 years of their release date, according to the Illinois Department of Corrections. And since then, the state has no idea, or maybe they don't want to know. And why? So the spokesperson said that Naomi Pozzello is her name. She told WGN that there's a programming issue with the file that generates those calculations and reports, said that the IT department is working on the issue, if you guys can believe that. Now, there's a lot of other stats that they should be keeping, and not to get too bogged down in the article, they do talk about, you know, the data will help improve the public safety because, you know, if you have less criminals on the streets and stuff, and if you're actually fixing the problem with rehabilitation, then it helps with public safety, making sure crime prevention programs are being effective. The ultimate goal, of course, is to rehabilitate the people in prison. Are you offering GED programs, educational programs to help rehabilitate these people so they can actually get jobs when they get out and that kind of stuff? Now, jumping over to the companion article, we have and this one, of course, is TampaFP.com, the Tampa Free Press. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson vows to eradicate law enforcement. It's a sickness, he says. So listen to this. And this is where the beans are being spilled. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, because, you know, him and the governor are tight. They declared his intention to eradicate what he called the sickness of law enforcement, jails, and incarceration during a fiery press conference on Tuesday. And it was first reported by CWB Chicago. The mayor's comments came in response to a question about his administration's public safety plan, and he claimed that President Donald Trump was attempting to take credit for a recent downtick in the Chicago murder rate. According to the outlet, Mayor Johnson cited specific years of high murder counts, including Chicago's record-setting 970 killings back in 1974. He listed over 800 in 1995, almost 800 in 2016, 805 in 2021. Now, he argued that these figures demonstrated that traditional policing and incarceration had failed to create safe community. So this is his argument, throwing out these high numbers, right? And here's a quote saying, this has been a problem in the city for a very long time, and it's a sickness that we're going to eradicate. And the mayor also stated that he was sick and tired of people believing that the only thing that black and brown and poor people could get in the city are badges, if you can believe he went there. However, CWB Chicago's review of the official record showed that what the mayor said wasn't exactly true, and it did not reflect the city's longer-term trend of declining homicides. So the report stated that between 2004 and 2013, Chicago's annual murder count, it never exceeded 513, and it frequently remained below the number 450. The murder counts for 2016 and 2021, they report of a broader national crime surge that happened during the pandemic. Critics noted that the city's long-term decline in crime, it occurred during the very period that the mayor described as being plagued by the sickness of arrest and incarceration. So he wasn't being completely truthful in those. So now we've got this dilemma. We've got, if you know where I'm going with this thing, we've got the situation where we've got a prison system where we're not getting stats for anymore. So we don't know whether we're really fixing the problem, whether it's a revolving door, or if we're even really trying to fix it, right? Because we don't know recidivism versus rehabilitation. And now we got the mayor, who's good friends with the governor, kind of letting it leak out that they're pretty much throwing their hands up and saying the system really doesn't work anyhow. So commentary on this, I know that Chicago, we got a governor and a mayor that think that they've got the pulse and the finger on the pulse of what's going on, and they think that they don't want help from anybody, right? Especially if he's got the last name of Trump. But when I read things like this, and there are tells in the stories, it makes me question not necessarily whether we had the right people in the job, because I think that we all would agree that we certainly can prove that we have the wrong people in the job. It's just, you know, what the potential answers are. So commentary on this, guys, we got about a minute and 15 seconds before we take our first commercial break. And Ralph is going to start us off. The floor is yours, Ralph.
You know, gentlemen in the audience, take the politics out of the names out of it and just look at what's right and wrong. You know, recidivism. I mean, being in L.A. County in the state of California, I ran the largest jail in Los Angeles County. I kept on seeing, as a captain of Men's Central Jail, seeing people coming all the time. I could only imagine in Chicago, when you have port statistics tracking, community-based organizations maybe getting money from the state of Illinois and from the mayor's office about community-based organizations maybe supposedly helping out people that get out of prison. You know, what is the statistics of that helping? Is it truly helping? And also is this, let's face it, to stop crime, you got to have good investigations, prosecution with the district attorney's office to make those cases, to be able to put people in prison, in jail, that deserve it. Now, listen, you're looking at a guy that I ran educational-based incarceration programs in Men's Central Jail, and I believe in the triangle. I believe in the triangle.
And hold that thought, Ralph. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Goals at Goals.com. And, you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And then when you throw the online option into it, it's like almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does it better than Goals at Goals.com. I mean, even their motto is proudly serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Goals at Goals.com. And hey, they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Goals gift card, and they will be your new best friend. And, you know, I always talk about sales. You know, they've got a special deal going, 20% off site-wide right now at Goals.com. There's a code that you can type in to get that, and you will find it if you hunt for it. Also, I just got a brand new pair of Danner boots in that are waterproof, and I got them on sale, Goals.com. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about one of my favorite sponsors, and they are also our satellite sponsor, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And, yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them the Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We are joined by, we've got former Chief Ralph Ornelas, and we've got former commander with LAPD, Jeff Wininger. So thanks for being on the show, guys. Jeff's also got his book that just came out on Tuesday called On Thin Ice. More information at onthinicebook.com as well. And actually, Jeff announced a winner yesterday. And this is the bling, the grab bag, the box that he sends out. I mean, it's he couldn't get everything in like a bag. So then he went with a box, and I think they're getting ready to go with a crate next, I think. But right now it's a free box with stuff in it. It's kind of cool. But we left, when we went to commercial break, we were talking about Illinois in the city of Chicago. And we're talking about, they're just not collecting stats anymore, recidivism in the prison system there. And now we've got the Chicago mayor saying that, you know what, the system doesn't really even work. And so it leaves me wondering what their intentions are to fix the problem, if they're even going to try to fix it, because we certainly have a proactive president that's offering to come in there and help take care of the problem. And I think Trump's issue is that we got people that are taking trips and vacationing and, you know, to Chicago. And if it's, you know, if they can't fix the problem, he certainly can fix the problem and protect the citizens and our taxpayers, you know, but they don't want the help there. So I know, Chief Ralph, I know that you were talking about, you've got some experience over from the California side of all this stuff going on, and that you actually had the prison at the sheriff's office over there. So the floor is yours.
No, and I say the triangle, suppression, prevention, intervention programs do work, but you have to have the right people believing in the system about suppression, have the coordination of patrol detectives addressing the gang shootings, the murders, the assault with deadly weapons, whatever those cases are, you have to work them to level right to prosecution level. Prevention programs do work. But I got to tell you, my heart breaks for the police officers in Chicago, because they must want to do the job. Oh. The leadership probably wants to do the job, and they're being held back. So you know something? The sad part about it is who is the victims and gets hurt all the time is the community. The Black and Latino community gets hurt because of the politics going in the middle, separating, not working, and all the components working as a team. And you know something? It just tears my heart out because I know Jeff and I, when we worked in our careers in Los Angeles, when I know we were successful, when I worked gangs as a lieutenant for 9 years and we did an investigation, let me tell you something. The community will never say it to you, but when you're on the end of a search warrant near a wall and you hear from a window, thank you very much. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Because they can't come out and say it to my face. They say it to a window when I'm covering the 1-2 side of a home. And you know something? My heart breaks for those community members that live in it. That's why I love the service that you did, Chip, Jeff did, and I did. And you know something? Those officers around the country need more support from all levels of government to really impact crime today.
Spot on. I love it. So any more comments? Jeff, did you have anything you wanted to throw in there? I know. Just, he kind of sucked. He sucked all the knowledge out of the room with that one, yeah. Didn't he? I mean.
You know, just real quickly, I get curious when I read that article about the recidivism and things like that. I'm like, well, how could they not have this data? What was the stop or the speed bump that created the circumstance where they're not capturing this? And I looked this up in 2023, they had some legislation where they had reform for prison programs, and they have youth parole laws that changed where youth offenders are getting out serving less time, as well as they expanded the sentencing criteria for adult people that have been incarcerated, where they can go back in time and give them credit for good behavior. So they're serving shorter periods of time. I suspect that the results are the recidivism rates have gone up, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Imagine that.
Hey, if I may chime in, I mean, look at Prop 109, AB 109, that went in place October 1st, 2011, that depopulated the state prisons of California. Prop 57 restructured, as Jeff was saying, in California, letting out more prisoners on parole. And also, Jeff was spot on here in California, where they're looking back at Ralph Fornell was arrested at the age of 21. Okay, how is he now? And they let him out. I mean, look what they just try to do to the Menendez brothers. I mean, how could you even think about letting two men, not boys, not kids, men out of prison who blew their mother's head off? As we say in Brooklyn, forget about it. Come on, really? Yeah.
There you go. And I do want to point out, we have Betty Dunn. We were talking about your fentanyl education program that you volunteered to do. And Betty Dunn, of course, one of our most dedicated listeners, is thanking you because she lost her granddaughter to fentanyl. So, wow. So you're doing God's work, Ralph. Well, guys, I want to get to the next main topic, if that's okay. So let's do that. And it's a doozy. So again, two more articles. I have 2 minutes to go through this. So we may not get to the commentary until after the second commercial break. But RVMnews.com, Vance, and we're talking about J.D. Vance, our vice president, amplifies poll showing liberals are far more likely to justify violence. So guys, so this is in black and white. Vice President J.D. Vance presented polling data on Monday indicating that political violence is viewed as more acceptable among self-described very liberal Americans compared to their conservative counterparts. He goes on to say that, well, he was hosting the Charlie Kirk show for once and on Real America's Voice, and actually did it from the White House, which was pretty cool in and of itself. He used his closing remarks to outline what he called the difficult truths that the country must face in order to move toward unity. He cited a YouGov survey that was released last week and examined public attitudes towards political violence and reactions to death of political opponents. And according to the poll, now listen to the numbers, 24% of self-identified very liberal respondents said that it was actually acceptable for someone to be happy about the death of a public figure they oppose. So that's one quarter. That's like 24%. That's like one quarter, right? By comparison, only 3% of very conservative respondents gave the same answer, along with 10% of liberal respondents and 4% of conservative respondents. Goes on to say that when asked whether political violence could be justified as a means to achieve political goals, the numbers also showed a sharp divide. Liberals that were 18 to 41 in age, 26% agreed. That's over a quarter that violence can be justified in some cases. And while this, the time is just going fast, right? And then we get to where... Then we get to where 7% of conservatives and 12% of moderates in the very same age group express the same view. So, guys, it's about to get very real, and we're going to be covering all this in just 1 second. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we are introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And, yes, we're talking about one of Jeff's favorite subjects, long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. The M4A1 Pro and the Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market on AeroPrecisionUSA.com last year. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer, which means that now you guys can start getting your hands on some of this primo stuff. And their M5 AR 308 platform, spectacular. Don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We are joined by former Chief Ralph Ornelas, and we've also got former Commander LAPD Jeff Wininger. Ralph worked for the LA Sheriff's Office before he went and became a police chief, and also Jeff, of course, was the LAPD. We've been talking about a new topic, and I'll tell you, it's deep. Vance amplifies, or of course, our Vice President J.D. Vance amplifies poll showing that liberals are far more likely to justify violence. This is not just something that he's saying. It's in black and white, and he's explaining the numbers to us. I loved off talking about among liberals ages 18 to 44, a pretty good size group. 26%, so over one quarter of them agree that violence can be justified in some cases. 7% of conservatives and 12% of moderates in the same age group express the same view. And then in a country of 330 million people, that's a lot of people, guys, according to our article, you can, of course, find one person of a given political persuasion justifying this or that or almost anything, but the data is clear. People on the left are much likelier to defend and celebrate political violence. Vance said that this is what he said while discussing the survey results. He also said this is not a both sides problem. And we've heard that argument. Remember on the five with Greg Gutfeld was talking about that as well. If both sides have a problem, one side is a much bigger and malignant problem. And that is the truth that has to be told. The problem has terrible consequences, and we're starting to see that. Vance referenced several incidents to underscore the stakes, including the attempted assassinations of President Donald Trump and House Majority Leader Steve Scalise. Also talked about, of course, Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Sad story. He said that these events highlight how rhetoric and behavior can build an environment where violence becomes more likely. Now, let's jump to our next one. Our next article, it is a radical leftist post kill list and demented frenzy targets respond. Guys, this is just, there are new reports indicate that in the wake of the assassination of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk, targeted hit lists are now appearing against conservatives, and they have appeared across social media platforms. The Center Square reported on Friday that in the wake of the assassination of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk, that thousands of social media posts appear to list politically conservative targets for assassination by the political left. And it's just case in point. The names of the most frequently mentioned people include President Donald Trump, of course. We got podcast host Joe Rogan, author J.K. Rowling. We got Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, Libs, a TikTok founder, Chaya Rachik. We've got Elon Musk and Andy Ngo. I don't know if I pronounced that last name correctly, but and the list goes on. And these are by liberals. So, I mean, you know, they have two articles, and then they have, I mean, actions speak louder than words, right? This list is what I consider an action that only reinforces what I just read in this article. So commentary on this, guys. We got a little under 8 minutes before we take our next commercial break. Jeff Wininger.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to comment on the second article because I think it's really important. And it's not necessarily about who's making the list or who's actually on the list. This is about law enforcement being able to find a way forward where we're preventing these things from occurring. We've lost the battle if we're finding all of this stuff on social media after something tragic has occurred. It's all about finding a way where we're monitoring this stuff and we're identifying people that we need to reach out and touch. And why is that important? It's important because people, when they hide behind the screen of their computers and their keyboard warriors, they still have this sense of anonymity. And if we're not reaching out and allowing them to know that we know what they're saying and what they're doing, we need to be looking at what is the best path forward to address what's going on. And if there's something criminal and we can find something that meets the elements of a crime, then we pursue that. So we can't just have all this stuff that's going on. And look how quickly we found this stuff on social media after this tragic shooting. So why is it hard to find and be doing it in a proactive way where we would have reached out and touched this guy? And he, whoa, okay. I mean, it's ludicrous. And if you look at the whole thing, I mean, we even watched video of this guy with a long rifle shoved down the leg of his pants as he's walking through this neighborhood. How in God's name did somebody not see him and think that looks odd where it's addressed? So it's, you know, whether you're catching it on various platforms of social media, chat groups or what have you, or citizens are seeing things, they need to know that they have a responsibility for the safety of our communities and then everybody involved here, that they do something and say something. And, you know, it's important. You see something, say something. So then those people that are trained and have the ability to prevent things from occurring can get rolling and make that happen.
Well, true. Excellent. If only somebody would write a book, Ralph, about that, huh?
Yeah,
and of course, on thin ice is what I'm going with that.
Absolutely, on thin ice. And, you know, Jeff mentioned the word proactive. And I believe what's taking place in the public, in the citizenry, nobody wants to get involved anymore. And especially when after the incident happened in New York City on the train, you know, how could you not get involved in things that you know is wrong? And I agree with Jeff in the sense that somebody has to have consequences, some entity on consequence of young people getting online, thinking it's okay. And when they know something, or like Jeff said, you see something, you say something. Well, if you see something online that you know is definitely incorrect or against the law, you have an obligation to report it. And I really believe our communities, our youth, got desensitized. And I really believe it's beyond these computer games. I know that's another whole topic, but it does involve the mindset of young people truly not understanding that's only a show. It's not reality. And, you know, it really makes me sad that something gets to that level. And, you know, I think it's tragic that Charlie Kirk or, you know, the assassination two attempts on Trump, or look at that young girl on the rail of North Carolina. I mean, did you notice nobody jumped in? I could guarantee you, the three of us, if we were on that train rail, we would have jumped in. How could you not? I have a daughter that lives in New York. I worry about her every day. So I agree with everything Jeff said.
Yeah, it's a you know, guys, be vigilant, heads on a swivel, and there's got to be consequences for things that you do. You know, we have. Look, there has been obviously a shift, but the media technology has helped create some of this, in all honesty, in my opinion. I mean, you know, back in the day before we had the advent of the internet and stuff, I mean, you know, the ability to weigh in now. Remember, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, when people were going to get up and say something, you knew who they were. And when someone was just whacked out, you know, you took the microphone away from them and you never listened to anything else they said again. It's like the boy that cried wolf, right? You know, after that, no one is going to let you grab the microphone and talk anymore. With the anonymity and the internet and the people that and the news organizations that post on, I mean, we're seeing declassified information now about actors that have just been intentionally lying and intentionally spreading bad information, and they're still doing it. And no one's holding the feet to the fire and eliminating that. They still have the microphone and people are still listening. And so it's kind of hard to change that in today's society. I don't know how you get away from that. But it's just getting It's just making it very difficult in today's world. So, and I love technology, but.
I love technology too, but you know, these things here, you know, smartphones are making some of us dumb. And I worry about our youth. You know, when I give, I just don't understand how could you come up with a list, a hit list? And yeah. I mean,
well, I think Jeff just talked his way on that list. I wouldn't be surprised next week. I'm going to look for Jeff's name on that list now after what he just said. So,
you know, I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, my son, he's 14 years old. And, you know, when he was in intermediate school, now he's in middle school, you know, these kids are going to be kids. Boys are going to be boys. And sometimes you have to allow them to settle their own differences. And unfortunately, in society right now, parents want to get involved. They want to settle all the problems for their kids. And, you know, sometimes, I don't know, I'm sure both of you, and I know I certainly did, at recess growing up, there's a couple times I threw some punches, a few times I pushed people down. I mean, it is what it is. And that is where you kind of police your own and you're moderating this type of behavior. And that's where it starts. Yeah. And we've lost it when it comes to that.
Can I say something else?
Well, yeah, we gotta roll on, and I've got just 1 minute here, so make it go real quick, Ralph, and then I'll whet the appetite for the next story.
15 years ago, a female psychologist, Psychology Magazine, wrote an article about elementary schools and middle schools. Not enough men being teachers anymore, allowing the pushing, as Jeff said. Young men need to have that understanding, negotiation, pushing, and getting to know where they are in that space. It doesn't happen anymore. And I think we do an injustice to our young men.
All right. Well, there it goes. I'm going to get so many letters from angry female teachers now. Thank you so much, Chief Ralph. I appreciate that.
I brought more attention to your show.
I that's why we love you. All right, guys. We've got two stories. They're not great. We got cops getting shot, but one's got a video component to it. Stick with us. We're going to be telling these stories. There's something to be learned from this stuff. We have our third commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, guys, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also Attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, you're a chief or a sheriff, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We are joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas, and we've got Commander Jeff Wininger, and I've got a story that we're going to be talking about. If I can get Chief Ralph, if you can mute your microphone for me, I appreciate it. And LawOfficer.com, we got 5 officers shot, 3 fatal in Pennsylvania. So we got North Carotis Township in Pennsylvania. And what started as a follow-up on a domestic case along a stretch of rolling farmland in York County, it ended up being one of the deadliest days for Pennsylvania law enforcement in years. We had 3 officers killed and 2 more critically wounded. The suspected gunman dead, which is about the only good news that came out of this. We got state police said the officers were at a property on Wednesday afternoon connected to a domestic-related investigation that started on the day before. So when they move in to serve a search warrant and arrest warrants, all of a sudden, gunfire erupts. We have 2 officers being rushed to Wellspan York Hospital, and officials said they remain in critical but stable condition overnight. The suspect was shot and killed at the scene. Law enforcement sources said that the operation was tied to warrants stemming from the domestic violence incident that happened before. The investigators are examining whether prior threats or weapons reports were documented before the attempted service, you know, the search warrants and the arrest warrant. And they have not disclosed the caliber of the weapon that was used or how quickly the gunfire unfolded, but preliminary accounts indicate that the officers came under heavy fire almost immediately. And the investigation is continuing and is being conducted by the Pennsylvania State Police. And they also have some federal agencies that are helping out as well. And again, we got 5 officers shot, 3 fatal in Pennsylvania. A sad time. The story came out. It's a fresh story. There could be some a video component that we don't have yet. And sometimes I don't necessarily always show the video component. Sometimes it's just not appropriate to. So I don't know if we're going to have a video component that we show or not on the reference to this, but I wanted to get this out there because we have two stories that are kind of similar with these cops getting shot, and it seems like these things happen in groups, right? So anything that we can do to keep an officer from getting shot or injured, and guys, keep your heads on swivel. And just because we got ambushes going on. We got one, which was an ambush, but the guy the guy rolled up on cops and he just surprised them and started shooting them. And the next one, and they're at a dead end eating pizza together, So you really never know whether the bad actor is your quote complainant on a call. You really never know. And let's face it, when bad guys want you bad enough, it's really hard to prevent that from happening. You got to be on your A game all the time. So if there's no commentary on that, we'll jump to our next one. Then we've got on the story with the video component at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have dash and body cam videos that shows the ambush attack on a Lorain police officer. And it killed Officer Philip Wagner, ended up getting killed in this. Guys, this is just a mess.
172 right there, stop. Okay, that's one. He's got a rifle, get out.
In Ohio. I know, Jeff, that's where you're living at, and maybe you can give us a backdrop on Lorain County, but this guy shot three Lorain police officers, killing Officer Philip Wagner. He had 100 pounds of explosive material inside his car, and he had more than 7,500 rounds of ammo. I mean, those numbers are staggering. Michael Parker is his name, heavily armed and prepared for a violent and prolonged encounter. Look at all that ammo, said Elyria Police Captain Bill Lance at a news conference on Thursday. Parker, a bad guy, fired 193 times. Captain Lance said that more than 200 loaded magazines were found. Several containers of loose ammunition were also located in this car. Officers found a total of 10 firearms, including 7 rifles, and 5 of those had scopes. So on July the 23rd, 12:46 p.m., Officer Peter Gale pulls into the dead end of Riverbend Drive, and at 12:52, so just about 6 minutes later, Officer Wagner pulls in next to him, and they are eating pizza. And Parker, our bad guy, arrives and immediately fires multiple shots, and he hits Officer Wagner. And they say it was originally believed that Parker, the bad guy, was there before the officers got there and ambushed them, but he pretty much did it after he rolled up. Now, Officer Gale managed to drive away to get help. So that's the first flag in the story. So it says Officer Gale managed to drive away to get help. This guy ended up being shot. I don't know at what time. I don't think he ever left his car, and he got shot in the hand. So he drives away. They make it. And look, I don't want to be overly critical, but they make it sound like he beat all odds and was able to drive away to get help. Well, that's not normally what cops do, but I'm just mentioning what they said in the story. So then from 104, when this guy leaves and he leaves the officer Wagner that ended up being shot, ends up dying. He leaves him there. He goes to get help. From 104 to 107 p.m., Parker, our bad guy, prepares for the arrival of more officers, and he moves several rifles on both sides of his vehicle. So then about almost 4 minutes later, Officer Gale, and who's the one that left, and Officer Brent Payne, he's 47 years old, they go back to the scene, and they kind of roll in together. Within seconds, the front windshield of Officer Payne's cruiser gets struck several times. At least 25 to 30 rounds end up being fired. Now, Officer Payne exits his cruiser. When you first watch this, you're just watching a dash cam and you're hearing the officer grunt and groan and stuff, and you're thinking, crap, he's in the freaking cockpit of the car getting you know, hit with bullets, and that's not what happened. He was mic'd up and he had exited his car, and he was running, you know, he's backing away from his car with his pistol out, and he falls down when the guy opens up on him. So he actually left cover. He left the protection of the engine block and all that, and he's creating distance, which puts him on the side of the bad guy, and he goes down. Now, I don't have any indication that he got shot at that time. He gets back up and he's rolling around on the ground, and he seeks cover behind the other guy's car, which is Officer Gale. He seeks cover behind Gale's car, and that went fine until Gale drove away again and left him out there in the middle of a freaking street in a field. And then this officer, who's armed only with a pistol, starts running away. And so instead of just backing away with a pistol, now he's freaking hauling butt with his back to the bad guy, and he gets shot at that point. He ends up surviving, but he ends up getting shot. And our second, you know, the officer that fled in the car that the dude was using for cover, he was the one that ended up getting shot in the hand while he was in his cruiser. I don't think he ever got out of the car. So it goes on to say that at 1:10, it says that an SUV with another Lorain police officer arrives, and an FBI agent. They're able to find Officer Payne. They put a tourniquet on him, likely saving his life. So he's the one that was running through the field and got shot. He was trying to get to the woods. And they transported Payne to Mercy Hospital. And then we got two other SUVs arrive with the Lorain officers, and they take cover, and they see Parker, a bad guy, near a silver vehicle, and they fire and kill that sucker, which is the best news in this story. Officers then pull Officer Wagner from his cruiser and rush him to the hospital. He's the original officer that was there with Payne, and he ended up dying, unfortunately. Officer Gale, the one shot in the hand, I nicknamed him the Fleer, and Officer Payne, they both survived their injuries. And Officer Gale, the guy that got shot in the hand, he's expected to return to work in a couple of months. The other officer, Payne, that had been hiding behind his cruiser, they got shot trying to run through the field when he lost his cover. He recently had another major surgery, and it says his arm is completely shattered, and he's not expected to be able to return to police work. Captain Land said that they're still working on trying to understand the motive, the plan. None of the three officers they say were targeted. They think it was a spontaneous ambush act. Captain Land said they have no evidence that Parker, the bad guy, had any assistance in the crime. Parker had previously been diagnosed in 2016 with paranoid schizophrenia. He was a lifelong resident of the area of Lorain, and they said he had a lot of guns. Family knew he had guns. He had no alcohol or drugs in his system when they did toxicology. We got a little over a minute. We may be able to go a little bit over than that, but Jeff, why don't you start us off?
You know, I think that this is an opportunity for all law enforcement agencies across the country to assess themselves. And what I mean is to ensure that you're training your officers to be able to confront this type of a situation and have the tools and the knowledge and the insight and the training. And I emphasize the training to be successful and win these types of battles. The reality is 60% of law enforcement officers in this country are required to fire under range only 1 to 2 times a year. That's a reality. And only 1% of officers in this country are required to fire under range every month. So what makes us think that these officers have had active training when you're dealing with long gun type scenarios where you're going to be in this type of a gun battle? Not likely. And there was a number of things that I saw that they just weren't doing properly as far as cover and all that, that just basically makes it perfectly clear they hadn't trained for this.
Chief Ralph, I know that we're going to go a little overtime. We're cutting to the wounded blue time, but Chief Ralph?
I agree with everything Jeff said, and I think a lot of training, especially in rural areas, about long rifles. You know, sometimes being in a car is a target. Even in the inner urban cities that we worked in, they would train us. Sometimes a car is not your friend. You got to get away from the car. So if I was driving up to that, I would have looked for trees in the distance, something good covered besides a car. But everything Jeff said, I agree with. More training, more shooting in urban and rural areas. Train about long rifles, you know, in that danger, because in the inner city, we train about pulling up to a home.
I appreciate it. You're absolutely right. Chief Ralph Ornelius and Commander Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, thanks for being on the show, guys. Appreciate it. Do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Please check them out. Also, our sponsors, Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn.com, and Medicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells and FishOrlandoBass.com. Thanks for the support, guys. We'll see you back Monday, 12 noon Eastern.